Yes, sir. I am so excited today because I am with Lee Walker III, and we're perched on the top rope. We're ready to buzz, and the hive is alive. So come on in and join us today.
Thank you.
Of course, you'll edit that, right?
Yes, I will. I'll edit the where. Yeah, I'll edit.
Okay. You want another one, or is that?
Oh no, that was perfect. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to start in 3, 2. Welcome, everyone, to Perched on the Top Rope. And as you heard from that show opener today, I have from one half of the Killer Bees, B. Brian Blair. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm excited. I'm excited to be on the show with you, Lee. And, you know, my good buddy Steve Kern was on the show not too long ago. I see Steve all the time. We were just at the Royal Rumble together and in St. Petersburg, Tropicana Field, 48,000 people. You know, it was very exciting. The office brought us there and did a few things for WWE. And, you know, they treat the legends like royalty. So, you know, it's a good thing. And it's just great to reach your audience and, you know, get ready to talk about, you know, the bee's knees, whatever's happening, whatever's buzzing today, we're going to talk about. Because I know, as I said, you know, this hive is going to be alive because we're going to talk about some fun stuff.
And one of the things I was actually going to talk about was your appearance at the Royal Rumble. Other members of the Cauliflower Alley Club were there as well. And DDP even got to be part of the media scrum, getting to ask questions. As you said, that they brought you there for that. So is there any possibility that we could see a working relationship with the Alley Club? Because, you know, WWE is very big on organizations and foundations that help others. And the Cauliflower Alley Club is one of those things that do tremendous things that help other professional wrestlers in a time of need.
Absolutely. You know, I've been the president and CEO now for 10 years, Lee, and I was honored in 2012 by the CAC, and I saw what a fantastic group, all the good things that they did. The fact that everybody worked there for without compensation, that really being a businessman and understanding business, and plus being so fond of my colleagues, all that together just culminated and made me want to be a part of the organization. So the WWE happens to be our number one sponsor now. You know, they fly our any WWE related talent in. As long as you're on good terms with WWE, they fly them in, and which helps us out tremendously. Pick up the guys' rooms, you know, they sponsor, you know, 20, they buy 20 seats up front, they 20 reunion tickets, as well as you know, various things, and you know, we scratch their back sometimes too if they have somebody that's fallen on financial difficulties, and for some reason the company, the corporate has a reason for not wanting to give them money. They'll refer them to us, and you know, we never turn down anybody as long as it's not for drugs, alcohol, you know, gambling, bad habits. We help everybody that applies as long as they meet the criteria, and that is, you know, as long as they have been in the business, made a full time in the business for, you know, at least 1 year, preferably 3 years, but that's at the board's discretion, depending on how much they gave to the business. We just have wonderful members. You can join the Cauliflower Alley Club for $35 a year, which allows you can join for a lifetime for $400. And it allows you to go to our reunions. Our 58th reunion is coming up August 19th through the 21st in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Palms hotel and casino, and that's right across from Fremont Street, which is like Bourbon Street on steroids. It's just a great time. I mean, we have seminars. Ron Hutchinson puts on some tremendous seminars, and Rich Jingling's my EVP, and he's helping Darla Staggs. I mean, Pam Morrison. We've got Royal Duncan and all these volunteers that just, Medusa. Medusa's, she's helps me with talent. She's my talent relations person, and she is always on the ball. And people come there like DDP and fall in love with the club, and we just continue to grow and grow. And because of kind people, we if you go to an event, Lee, if you ever come to a Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, it's addicting because it's just everybody's nice. There's always something to do, whether it's karaoke, whether it's watching wrestling matches, whether it's getting your swag signed by the guys and girls, the honorees. It's just there's always something to do. And you got Vegas itself, it's just, never sleeps. And sometimes we don't get a lot of sleep. And my wife thinks I'm crazy for paying for a job, but because I, I pay my own airfare, my own way out there, I pay all my expenses. And but it's a labor of love. I enjoy it so much.
It really is tremendous, and fans, I'll have links in the descriptions. You can donate if you all, you could become a member, and look at the lifetime memberships, fans, because you'll see a lot of notable names in the wrestling industry that are lifetime members, and
Absolutely.
it's really incredible. It's incredible work, and sometimes in this business, in the dark days, I feel like sometimes fans can forget about the good things that get done in the business as well.
Exactly. There's so much good that gets done in this business, Lee. You're so right. I mean, all the your listeners have to do is go to caulifloweralleyclub.org, like the vegetable cauliflower alley, ALLEY, club CLUB.org, caulifloweralleyclub.org, and everything's there. What's happening with the reunion, how to sign up, who was inducted into our Hall of Fame, who the new honorees coming up. Well, those won't be posted until March. They'll start being posted in March, but we're going to have a tremendous lineup again this year. Last year we had, give you an example, I've got a program here from last year. CM Punk, Mickie James, Damien 666, the Nasty Boys. It was Ron Simmons and Coco Beware. Great people. Let's see, I don't want to miss anybody. Jody Malenko, Dean's brother. And Jody is a great guy. He lives here in Hillsborough County in the Bay Area, Tampa Bay Area, where I live. And Rhea Von Slasher from Canada. Koji Miyamoto came all the way from Japan to accept the James C. Melby Award, which is an award given for the best historian. Al Burke, golly, Al's a great guy, and we usually honor somebody once a year posthumously, and we honored Killer Carl Cox last year. And this year, you each year we try to the fans write in. If you're a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club, you make suggestions, and we add them all up in different categories, and we start making phone calls, and we try to have the best possible lineup that we can possibly have. And it's always entertaining. Medusa and Joe, I think of Joe's last name right now, forgive me, tremendous announcer. He announces for MLW. Joe's last name, help me out.
I the worst part is
Yeah,
I
I
know.
hate when I do that because it makes me look bad, and
I'll edit, so don't worry. But
and Joe's a great guy.
hold on.
Yeah.
I
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, well, I know the guy that they got a Tim Barr. What was his name? I'm not going to be able to find it right now. I'll be able to.
Yeah, I get it, but that's okay. Anyway, this guy's a really good announcer. I mean, he's really good, and he keeps things alive. Jim Ross will probably be there this year since we're giving away the first annual Jim Ross Announcers Award. We also have Carl Lauer was instrumental in putting the CAC together. It started with Iron Mike Mazurki in 1965, but Carl Lauer worked for over 30 years. He was a very good independent promoter, did very well at it. And we have the Carl Lauer Independent Wrestlers Award that, I mean, Independent Promoters Award that will be given away. So, it's going to be a great time, just like always.
Incredible. And fans, I will have links in the description for you for all of this. You can go to the website and check it all out. Now, what's also incredible, Brian, is your book, Truth Be Told, which
Thank you.
amazing. Amazing. So there's a couple of stories in there in particular, and you had even brought two things up. Steve Kern helped us set up this interview. You teamed with Steve Kern in Howard Brody's NWA. So what was it like to team with Steve?
Steve was great. I've teamed up with Steve in a lot of other places besides Howard Brody's NWA. Steve's he's really, how you have your best friends on one hand. Steve is on one of my fingers. He's one of my very best friends in the world. And I trust him immensely being out in the ring with him. I know always know he's got my back. We feed off of each other. We talk to each other. It's a shame we didn't have an actual tag team run together. I mean, we had different belts together and different independent organizations, but it's a shame we didn't have a run together in a major organization. Florida Championship Wrestling, we had belts, but the territories now, most people forget about the territories. And those were the greatest days of my life, probably, were the territory days. I mean, WWE, don't get me wrong, it's a whole different experience, a whole different world. But territories were, very unique in the fact that, you had a smaller group of guys, you had a pretty set schedule of where you were going to go. It was primarily by car, unless, you were going out to Japan or overseas for somebody. You were, and for example, in the Florida territory, Monday you would be in West Palm Beach or a spot show down south. Tuesday you were in Tampa in the Armory. Wednesday morning you did television at 11 o'clock. And Wednesday night you'd be in Miami and you would either fly if you had $60 to fly or $75, depending on whose plane you were taking. And otherwise, you drove that 350 miles there and back on Wednesday night. Then Thursday, you drive all the way up to Jacksonville, which is a couple hundred miles up north from Tampa. Everybody lived in Tampa, so it was good. We're going up and down. Friday was Fort Lauderdale. You'd head back south or another southern spot show. Saturday was either Lakeland or we'd either be in Lakeland or St. Petersburg at the Bayfront Center. And Sunday was every other week was the High Life Ronton in Ocala at 1 p.m. And then, of course, the Eddie Graham Sports Center, Sports Arena in Orlando, which was a great building to wrestle in. And, that was really unique about the territories. Then when you kind of had your run in the in the Florida territory, you could go to the Georgia territory or to New York or to wherever. I was very blessed in the fact that I never had to pick up the phone and ask, for a job. I always had somebody asking me to come into their place. And, in the book Truth Be Told, it really lays it out, which is available on Amazon, by the way. That's kind of a picture of the front. And speaking of Steve Kern, Steve did one of my forewords, along with Bret Hart, Bret Hart has an actual drew a caricature in me, which he's very famous for. This is the back cover. And again, you can get it on Amazon, or if you want an autograph, you can go to the Killer Bee store, dot net, the Killer Bee store dot net, and I can send you an autograph copy. But the book gets into a lot of detail, a lot of funny stories, a lot of things that, I'm not real proud of, but things that happened. It's part of the business. And, there's a lot of ribs that go on in the business, Lee. I mean, talking to Steve, I'm sure he told you about that. But yeah, everybody's joking. Everybody. I mean, from the time I got in the business, I was getting ribbed. And I got a little, more seasoned than it was, the shoe was on the other foot, so to speak. We'd be ribbing the younger guys, or sometimes even the older guys. Just depended on who it was and if there was a reason,
I absolutely love the ribs in wrestling. Owen Hart is actually one of my favorite wrestlers. So as soon as you brought up ribs, I was like all for it.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be around Owen in the mid 80s when he first came into the WWF. I would say it was like 86, 87.
Yeah, right in there, yes.
Yeah, he was working as the Blue Blazer.
When he first came in, it was just Owen Hart. Owen Hart.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, Brett made me babysit him because we were running three towns at the time, Lee. And we'd get our booking sheets a month in advance. And Owen came in and he had asked if he could be on the same shows with Owen. And so he could kind of make sure that, he felt comfortable in this new territory, this big territory. And Brett saw that he wasn't on one show with him, but I was on every show. So he asked me if I could watch Owen and let Owen ride with me and stuff for the month. And that turned into 6 weeks. And it was a great 6 weeks. I'll never forget Owen. He was great. He could say he picked up this Playboy magazine, and he said, "Hey Brian, look, we're going to Chico in California, and Chico State University is named Party College of the Year. You think we can go there?" I said, "Sure, Owen, if you want to go there." I said, "Don't tell your brother, Oh, of course not. No. So we went to this place called Madison Beer Gardens, and they give you beer bucks. I still have a bunch of them. And you buy them at the door. I think it's to cut down on shrinkage or, giveaways and stuff. So if you think you're going to drink $20 worth of whatever beer, you buy $20 worth of beer bucks. I don't know how many dollars we bought, but I still have like $30, $40 left. So we bought quite a few Madison Bear Garden beer bucks. Well, I won't go into too many details, but Owen had a great time. It was a fantastic time. I wasn't the best wrestler sitter, young wrestler sitter as I probably should have been, but Owen was a man and he knew what he was doing. And we had a good time, stayed out of trouble, never got in trouble. And ribs, oh gosh, fun ribs. He was already into the prankster stuff, right from the get-go. And he called Brett and pretended like he was Stu a couple times. It was so hilarious. Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. I wish we would have had, a cell phone so we could just put him on speaker and things like that. But we didn't. In one way, I wish we would have had cell phones, but in another way, I'm glad we didn't. But Owen was great. God bless him. What a great man.
Yeah, I've always had Owen rib stories of the 90s. I've never heard any during his first arrival into the WWF. So it's always really cool for me to hear about those things. And something for me that's really cool is I live in Oswego, New York, and a lot of fans don't actually realize this, even those here in the city of Oswego, that the WWF used to come to Oswego, New York, I believe I found all the way up from like 1977 all the way up until 1988. Digging through the archives, I had found that you yourself on June 3rd, 1984, wrestled here in Oswego, New York at SUNY Oswego, and the match was against Tony Colon. Anything you could tell us about wrestling Tony, what it was like going up through, New York and coming to a little town like Oswego?
Well, when your last name's Cologne, you immediately think of Carlos Cologne. Don't know if he's in any relationship or not. So you treat everybody with respect. And I always did that, Lee. I treated everybody with respect that I worked with. I enjoy people, and even though I got in several shoots, real fights with the guys, I never started one, never, not one time. Fortunately, because of my grueling training in the dungeon here in Tampa, where Hiro Matsuda broke me in for 3.5 summers, I learned hooking, and from high school, I think I still have the most letters, varsity letters in high school, because I played four sports. It was very difficult to do, and I wrestled, I played football, and I played baseball and track and field, and we'd get overlapping seasons, and it got to where my senior year I whittled it down to just football and wrestling, and I put my heart and soul into everything I did, and I learned from really good coaches and really good teachers. My parents were divorced when I was like 13, and I had to grow up very tough. And I wanted to spend every minute that I could, either playing sports or studying. And I figured that was my best way out of poverty, so to speak, and try to be the best that I could be. And listening to my coaches and my teachers really paid off for me. It was great. I had some characters too, but all of them were very interested in the kids, and so that they taught, that was a good thing. I was very fortunate.
Amazing. One thing I wanted to ask, I want to go back to Owen Hart real quick. AEW runs the Owen Hart Classic, the tournament that they have with, representing and remembering Owen Hart. What are your thoughts on the tournament that they do every year?
Well, I think it's great to keep Owen's name, in the spotlight. And it's really good. I was at Owen's funeral in Calgary, and there were a lot of the boys there. Owen had a lot of respect. I mean, he was just a super guy, and he was an overachiever. He wasn't a real big guy, but he was talented. He could work with anybody. He could work with Andre the Giant. He could work with Eddie Guerrero. It didn't matter who it was. I mean, Owen was just that kind of guy. He was true wrestler's wrestler. And you can't say enough good things about Owen, and he left behind a wonderful family. We pray for Martha and the family often, and he'll always be missed, but the tournament just, keeps that life of Owen alive, and I'm grateful to Tony Khan that he does this.
Yeah, I'm a big Owen Hart fan if I haven't given that away asking. So anything that puts a spotlight like that, I personally think it's great. And your book puts a great spotlight on the territorial scene. I have to ask, what was it like? Traveling was different during the territory days. How difficult did wrestlers find it going from wrestling like a territory schedule to the WWF, where now it's you're here, you're just now it's all over the place, all over the United States.
Well, I can't really speak for everybody. I know it was a big, it was a bigger adjustment for Paul Orndorff, let's say, because I always, Paul and I were like peanut butter and jelly. He was another one of my very, very best friends, and Paul didn't like it. It was constant planes, trains, and automobiles, so to speak. We were flying everywhere, and you'd have to drive to the airport and leave your car there, wait, pay that big parking bill when you got back. Whereas in the territory, you just get in the car, drive to where you're going, come back that night. In most cases, in most territories, you had a base town, a central town, and you'd be back in that town. So, with the exceptions of like, even in Louisiana, but it would vary from Baton Rouge. Some people would live in Baton Rouge, and some people would live in Shreveport because it was such a big territory. You encompass five different states, four different states, five different states. And going to New York was, it was adjusting to the airports, to getting to the planes on time, catching taxis, things like that. It was definitely different, definitely differently.
Yeah, because something I never actually thought about before until like really just now, because I was like realizing as you were talking about the territories, oh, you go here and then you go here and then here and okay, and then people can call you to go to other territories. And I started thinking to myself, that schedule changes a lot once WWF kind of put a kibosh to the territory scene. So it just kind of had me thinking, like, how did guys respond what to the new traveling? Because that's a whole new ball game now. Instead of just staying on the Northeast, well, this week you're on the Northeast, but next week you're going all the way across.
I remember one time, was Greg Valentine, the Killer Bees. And I don't know, it was Beefcake or somebody else. We had 67 days in a row in four different countries. We were in four different countries during those 67 days with no days off. And, I remember being in Australia, and, Jimmy's really upset. And I said, "Jimmy, what's wrong?" He said, "I'm missing my son's graduation and my daughter's recital and his graduation from elementary school to middle school, and his daughter's recital, and then it'd be something else that he was missing." And I didn't have kids then, and so it was really hard on the guys with children. They'd sacrifice all that stuff, all that family stuff that's priceless. I mean, it's priceless. And people don't realize how much they sacrifice, not just their bodies, but not that there wasn't a lot of fun and enjoyment that came with it, but it's kind of the price you pay to be a star. It's a bitter sweet job.
Yeah. And your book still paints that picture about all of that with the territories and transitioning with WWF. I found, truth be told, to be really interesting. One thing that I was actually kind of curious about, and I'm gonna let you know I don't do anything negative. I know that, through Dark Side of the Ring, you were part of the WWF steroid trial. You had your own lawsuit against WWF over merchandising after being gone from WWF, but them still marketing the Killer Bees, so to speak. So what I'm kind of curious about here is, was there any sort of shock when the WWF and Jack specific had contacted you about making Killer Bee action figures? Because you guys have, you and Jumping Jim have single figures, and you also have this classic two pack.
Yeah, and before that we had the LJNs,
Yes.
Cracker Jacks.
87.
Yeah, but and then we found out we were in Circle K cards, Cracker Jack boxes. We were in all kinds of things, and where Vince really missed the boat, where he could have made a gazillion dollars, is selling Killer Bee masks. Once we started Mass Confusion, he really missed the boat on that, but. It is what it is. They promised us the belts three times, and on the third time, when there was an excuse, I remember going ask Vince. I needed to talk to him in Salisbury, Maryland. I gave my notice and my 2 week notice, and it wasn't long after that 67 day tour as well. We went there. We were the first, like the first team contacted, the first babyface team contacted, to be a part of this major tag team division that they were going to incorporate into the WWE, WWF, and it did become that major tag team division, and the perhaps the greatest division of all time. I mean, at one time, the Killer Bees were the hottest tag team on the planet. I mean, we did the wrestling album, the Slammies. We won the Survivor Series. We won the Jack Tunney tournament. We're the first Royal Rumble, WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 4. The big event in Toronto with 70,000 people, which was their largest event to date as the WWF at that time. So many more things that we did. We did the Toyota commercial. We did the LJN commercials. We were just nonstop. I mean, it was crazy. You couldn't go anywhere without being noticed. And we did the wrestling album, the merchandising, the t-shirts, as you just mentioned, the action figures and the video games. It was a ton of stuff. And for them not to give us the belts was really a slap in the face. And you can't go back and re-win them. I mean, we had to go to the UWF and win that version of the tag team titles together as Mass Confusion. I don't look at back at that and regret any of it. I look back at it and I learned, and I think I made the right move when I gave my notice. I started Gold's Gym, so Tampa, and actually Steve Kern became a partner in one of my Gold's Gyms in Tampa Palms, and did that for you. I was going to Japan and still working for IWF and running the clubs at the same time. And finally, the clubs weren't for sale, and but Gold's Gyms were going public, and I took the highest bid, and I actually had Steve put in his own money into the club and to that particular club, and he made like 10 times his money on his investment, and it was a great investment for Steve. And he knows that I'm an honest guy and a straight shooter, and that's why we've been so close, been such friends. But I say this to everybody in life, if you feel like you are not comfortable where you're at and you think you can do something more with your life, don't hesitate to do that. Otherwise, you're going to regret never trying. And fortunately, I tried. It was just like, being elected to office. The first time I won the primary, but I lost by less than a half a percent against the most popular politician in Hillsborough County, one of the most popular politicians in the state of Florida at that time, Pat Frank, in 2002. And I then beat the what would become the mayor of Tampa, Bob Buckhorn. I beat him in 2004 and served on the county commission. We have got 1,500,000 people here just in Hillsborough County. We're one of the largest counties in the United States of America. We're larger than more people here than 10 other states. We're 1,272 square or 1,072 square miles. Rhode Island's 1,200 square miles. So we're almost the size of Rhode Island in land mass. So I was like running for governor in 10 other states, but I wanted to do it, and I would have regretted it if I didn't. I don't like to fail, so I did it again and won and was able to save the taxpayers. I have an award, I have one more award right here for the most innovative program in the United States of America for counties when I created senior zones. And going back to Gold's Gyms, I created a way to allow the 14 Gold's Gyms in the Bay Area to all pitch in $500 a month. I got a switching company. I procured the number 1-800-99 Golds. So I got the switching company. They can divide up the literally by the street. So everybody got the calls that were closest to them. It was all done on a map. And we put in $500. So the first radio ad that we bought $7,000. I think we spent like $4,000 on 93.3 The Power Pig and 98 Rock, the remainder there. And Macho Man did the first commercial. And I tell you, it was off to the races. We were making money hand over fist. And it was amazing, but I enjoy business. I've really enjoyed the wrestling business, but and I'm enjoying the Cauliflower Alley Club right now. This is my 10th year, so I'm kind of getting the itch to move. I'm not going to leave the Cauliflower Alley Club. I don't want to start that rumor, but I still have a lot of gas in my tank, and I'm ready to do go on to my next thing. Wrote a book, which we've been discussing, truth be told, and just I've done a lot of things, and I do a lot of things, and I stay busy and active. And this is the greatest nation in the world. Until what really bothers me, Lee, is the people that protest against this country. They've never been to other countries. We go to Malaysia or Singapore, and as soon as you get off the airplane, it says death for Dada, which is drugs, death for drugs. The nasty boys are reading the newspaper and they go, oh my gosh. I said, what? They said, they hung this Malaysian military man for three joints. He had three marijuana cigarettes and they hung him. And he had kids and a family. They hung him. They were caning people in the middle of the street. Our hotel was right down from this prison. And the nasty boys, because I booked the tour, they came to me and said, hey, Brian, you're not going to believe this. They're caning this guy right outside of our room. We can see him, right? So I go to their room and sure, they're on the second floor. You look right down and man, they're just beating this guy with a cane and he's screaming. And I have no clue what the guy did, but they'd march him every day. March, be a different person, march him out there. He'd be tied up by his hands and onto this post, onto this pole, and two guards would come out and whack, whack. They'd take their turns, whack, whack, with like a kendo stick. Brutal. We live in a tremendous country where you can be whatever you want to be. We have a constitution, and we have, at least right now we do, and hopefully, things will straighten themselves out in this country, because we're in a world of hurt right now. But we need to believe in this nation and support this nation, support the Constitution, and realize that this country gives us the right to protest. And a lot of the communist countries and places, you protest, you're going to jail. I mean, people just don't understand this, and they could keep wrestling, or they could boot wrestling off the air if they said it was too. You get a few people that decide wrestling's too violent, or whatever excuse they want to make. They can boot it off the air. When you get state-run government, and when you get an authoritarian type government, and I'm afraid we're getting close to that, and it's very scary.
I don't disagree with you on that at all. I mean, a prime example is, if anyone wants to go watch Dark Side of the Ring when WCW went over to North Vietnam, how scared those guys were. Like, I mean, you even hear like Scott Norton talking about, they put him in a room and, because they listened in on his phone call and the things he was saying,
Right.
That's scary to me. Like, no, thank you.
Oh.
I've been to other countries. Like, I've been to South America, Puerto Rico, Bahamas, London, Ireland, things like that. But I've never experienced a third world country like that, where people don't realize that in those countries, you can't say what you want to say. Here, you can, to an extent, say what you want to say. And
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
we have rights. We have rights that others don't, and I feel, those are things people should be happy for.
They should, and they should start studying politics. As I mentioned, I was a politician, and I do a political radio show every Friday for the past like 5 years. And if you don't know what's going on with your country, then you're not doing yourself a favor. I mean, look at both sides of the news, look at the left, look at the right, and then you can kind of decipher what you think is best for you. But you need to get involved, and you need to vote, and you need to realize what's happening. I mean, in Florida, we don't have a state tax because the people voted that way. The power of your vote is important, and you need to exercise that right. I'm not telling you how to vote. I'm just saying, get involved in the system. That it's your duty as a citizen to vote. I mean, we've got an invasion right now. We've got 30 million undocumented people in this country, and our own citizens, and people that, vets, homeless vets. It makes me sad, to see them, just suffering, and people with PTSD and different things just in the streets. And now, there's illegals taking away their rights because we don't have enough money to feed the whole world. I wish we did. It'd be a great time, but we don't even know who's coming into our country right now. There's so many people. It's, I'll leave it right there. We don't need to get into a political discussion, but I'm just saying that, Lee, people need to be aware of what's going on in this country while you have a chance, because if you don't, it's going to be snatched from under the rug just like that. Your bank accounts, watch out. I mean, there's a whole lot of things going on right now that people just don't understand. And pay attention, that's all I got to say.
No, I
And
agree with you. I grew up in politics. My dad was a county legislator for multiple years, actually. And you said one thing that really like got me, because it's what I do. I listen to this side, I listen to the right, I listen to the left, and then I formulate my opinion I formulate my thoughts and ideas based on facts provided.
Right, exactly. And you can always, there's good, there's a lot of good internet sources, but make them, let it be proof, not just hearsay, make them, what you're going to believe in needs to be backed up in writing by, or in, when you can hear their voice, the words come out of their mouth, and, or you can actually see, that we're paying a lot more money right now for everything. You obviously know something's broken, but we're at a time, we're at a breaking point in this country, and there's nothing more important to your life, my life, or anybody else's life that cares about freedom and liberty than knowing what's going on. And go to several sources, check it out, you decide, and just excuse me, exercise your right to vote.
Yeah. Soon as you turn 18, you got the right to vote, folks. So, take that first step. That's the first step you got to take, and then register to vote. Educate yourselves on what you on who you're voting for and ideas and everything else. It all starts with education.
That's
You
right.
got to educate yourselves.
Absolutely.
You brought up something very early in the interview, fans, I'm talking with B. Brian Blair, and we are talking about Truth Be Told, his autobiography, which Ian Douglas helped you write, who's done a lot of wrestlers' autobiographies.
That's
You bring
great.
up working on the Indian reservations for IWA. What was that whole experience like? I know that's one of the topics you said that actually don't get talked about much.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Shade created this tremendous business plan for wrestlers where he would sell the shows to Indian reservations, casinos, to military bases, and every weekend we were booked somewhere in America. And and it was great for like a year straight. I worked with Colonel DeBeers, Easy Ed Wiskowski. He had his own crew because we were never in the same place, twice. It was always a new gig every weekend, and he had him booked up for 6, 8, 10 weeks, sometimes 3 months ahead of time, 4 months ahead of time. And Tom was really good at what he did, and he had some very good talent, and we would go in there and put on a good, everybody would wrestle hard, work hard, and the people would be happy. And it made Tom a lot of money, and it made us a great living. He'd go work on the weekend and make more money than most people work make in the whole week. And get to see your buddies at the same time, meet some new friends. I love meeting the wrestling fans. I mean, meeting new wrestling fans is one of my favorite things. I love the fans. Something about wrestling fans, they're the greatest people in the world. They'll, you can say anything to them that's on your mind, they'll answer you honestly. They'll ask you some questions that, or bring some things up that you haven't heard, show you pictures that you haven't seen in years. I mean, there's always something fun and good, when you go to wrestling conventions and autograph sessions and things like that. And I enjoy that so much. I've got several of them booked this year. I'll be in Germany in April. I'll be in St. Louis on May 18th. I'm looking forward to that at the Kiel Auditorium for SICW wrestling. And I'm booked all over the place, and it's a lot of fun. I'm grateful that the fans are have great memories, and they appreciate the legends that worked hard. And God knows I put my body through a lot, and I've had a lot of surgeries, but I wouldn't trade it all for the world. And just like being at the Royal Rumble the other day, I mean, it's one of the, I love the wrestling industry. What can I say? It's through all the things that I've done, through politics, through business ownership, Gold's Gyms ownership, through helping others, through business consulting. Not to mention that I have over 20, I'm sorry, 7,500 hours, 7,500 hours of documented community service. That's from speaking at schools, coaching Little League, coaching football, doing speeches for organizations, and community services is another wonderful thing that I've gotten to do throughout my life. You got to give back, and I think giving back is so important. If you can give back, if you can help somebody and in some kind of way, if you can make their day a little brighter, if you just smile at somebody, you get, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, and you're going to, give somebody a big smile and they're going to smile back. You help make their day, just try to pick people up when they're down, and stay positive, and good things happen. Good things happen to positive people.
I've been able to be one of those fans who have been fortunate enough to meet you. Met in Albany, New York. You were with Eric Sims, actually. It was like 2018, 2019, and I got this two-pack signed. And you brought up being able to meet the fans and everything. Do you have like a favorite piece of memorabilia that fans like bring to you to get autographed?
I like some of the stuff that they actually make, that was never really on the market. Sometimes that's really cool. Personally speaking, I've still got my outfits from WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 4. I've got in WrestleMania 3, we wore Nike Dunk black and yellow tennis shoes, first team ever to wear tennis shoes. And I still have those, and I still have a ton of things. But action figures are always fun to sign, because to me, when you sign an action figure, Lee, it's just kind of a sign, like, wow, they actually made an action figure. I say this very humbly. They actually have my own action figure, and that's a pretty cool thing, to be able to say that. And and when you see the smiles on people's faces, when you sign them, I always try to write as neat as I can, even though I have, so many stitches in my hand here that it's hard to see, but there's a
Oh,
they go up
I can see it.
all the way from here up to here. I don't know how to get that. You can kind of see there a little more where it gets really gnarly
Oh,
up
yeah.
here, all through here. I tore these two tendons in Hiroshima. It was Big John Studd, Paul Orndorff, and myself against Fujinami. Kido, and Inoki. And I had Kido in the corner. And usually in Japan, the crowd's real respectful. I mean, they'll clap, they'll get a little upset, but they don't. It's not like America where they really get that ooh, real angry. But in Hiroshima this day, they really got angry, and they first started hitting my feet, trying to grab my feet when I had keto, and he got very scared. And then they like tried to grab his feet to pull him away from me, and I was trying to get him to stay with me. And when I had the back of his tights, my fingers slipped out, and two fingers stayed in there. And all of a sudden, he jumped, and I felt something pop in the middle of my hand. So my two tendons just broke, and so the doctors had to, I have to move. If I hold one of these three tendons, they all have to move together. I can't move those last three fingers down here, these two, unless I unless I do them all together. So, again, we've been through a lot, a lot. And I loved wrestling in Japan. And I know you had some questions about Japan.
Yes. So I am the co-host for Yoshitatsu, former WWE and former New Japan star. And it had been brought, I'd been brought it up. And he had quite a few questions. So I'm just going to like kind of go down the line like one by one,
Okay.
if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. We're perched on
So.
the top rope and I'm ready.
So Yoshitatsu would like to know what your experiences were like working in New Japan in the early 80s and 90s, but also working in New Japan in the 2000s.
It was always a good time working for New Japan Pro Wrestling because once you established yourself there as a hard worker that didn't take crap, and that you would fight for your right to be there, they treated you with the utmost respect. To start with, New Japan Pro Wrestling, we would stay in Shinjuku at the Kyo Plaza Hotel. And it's a beautiful hotel, Western style hotel, a king size bed, commodes, but then, I've been all over Japan. I've been from all the way north and Hokkaido and all the way south to Okinawa. I've been everywhere, all over in Japan, and from play little towns where they make their living, from making these little wooden dolls that they sell to just a variety of different places where they have different textiles and different things that they make and export. Because I'm always into businesses. I like to look at how people make their living and stuff. And, oh, as a matter of fact, here's a picture that Toshi might remember. This is, oh, you know what? This is a ticket from the tour when I tore my hand up there.
Oh, wow.
Is Big John Studd, Paul
Yeah.
Orndorff, myself, a guy from England next to Paul, and Missy Hyatt's first boyfriend, Tommy Gilbert, was on that tour. I think he was on that, or not, yeah, Tommy Gilbert. Well, that was a great tour. Lots of great tours in Japan. I've got so much stuff from Japan that I've brought home. You get a lot of presentos, and the people in Japan are amazing people. Before, you ever thought about wearing a mask in Japan, they're so polite that somebody was sick, they'd wear a mask out of courtesy. You go on the subway, whether it was a Marunouchi line or whatever line you're taking on the subway. You see lots of people with masks, and people were always polite, from the people around, the wrestling fans. I mean, the wrestlers. Osamu Nishimura was very young when I first started going there, and he was still training, and they kind of let him come over to me, and I'd work out with him a little bit sometimes, and he'd give me a massage or shine my boots or do my laundry or whatever. I mean, the young guys there work their butts off. And it's a very, very interesting way of life. There would be beer machines on the corners, and you'd never see a miner go into that beer machine. I mean, what a disciplined society. You could go get a Kirin or a Sapporo or Asahi, and you go eat sushi for 100 yen a piece. And Abdullah's been my tag team partner there many a times. You just mentioned Big Scott Norton, who had he's been my tag team partner several times. I mean, Van Vader, I would rather wrestle the Japanese every night, the Japanese wrestlers, than have Van Vader as my partner. Because when we were the main event, when we wrestled together, we'd be the main event almost always, or whoever I was with. And that they'd go over, and Vader didn't want to do the job, so I'd have to do the job. And his favorite finish was, let's say we're wrestling Fujinami and whoever, and I've got Fujinami in a I've got him in a full Nelson, and I'm behind him, and Vader hits the I'm in the middle of the ring, Vader hits the ropes and comes with the big Vader clothesline, and Fujinami reverses it, and Vader hits me. Well, I wouldn't have to do a thing, and I would do, a 180, sometimes a 360, just off the force of him. I mean, he would hit me so freaking hard, and I'd say, Leon, don't hit me that hard. Finally, we almost came to it was down to we were getting ready to fight, and we didn't. Maybe it was a good thing. I don't know for who, but because I certainly had a reputation for never backing down. I never lost a fight, but I never started one either. And Leon was certainly a big tough guy, and I don't like to talk to about him because he's deceased now. But Paul Orndorff, kicked his butt with flip-flops on one time. Paul's a very, very tough man. Leon would be a little reckless in the ring, whereas your Japanese opponents were very stiff. A lot of times we could be very, very stiff, and but they never really, hurt you. And it was a place where injuries were often. I mean, you never had a match in Japan where you were not sore afterwards, and that's saying a lot, because you can usually go through. It's like lifting weights. I tell people the same thing. It's kind of like lifting weights. If you go lift weights one day, and you hadn't worked out in 6 months, you're going to be very, very sore if you do, if you do what you think you can do, do that kind of a workout. Let's say you had a normal workout where you were doing 9 sets of biceps and 3 different exercises of 3 sets, and you go if you just go do 2 different exercises and 2 sets, you're going to be very, very sore, and your muscles have to get used to it. And it's just like your body gets used to it in the ring. It's a whole different thing. You just go hit the ropes. Most people don't realize just hitting the ropes hurts. When you go hit the ropes, oh gosh, especially the ones that were solid cable with the garden hose over them, boy, you would get welts underneath you. But after a while, it was like you were calloused. But wrestling in Japan is very tough, Lee. Very, very tough. It's very rewarding, very tough. The fans are very appreciative, but they expect you to get down and rumble.
Oh, I can believe it. And Yoshitatsu has a list of superstars. He's curious what it was like to work with them. And I'm just gonna go one by one. First one is Antonio Inoki.
He was great because The Chin, his nickname was the Chin. He didn't. When I worked with Inoki, which was several times, he didn't want to do a lot. But what he wanted to do, he wanted to make sure that every move meant something, and so he wasn't all over the place. And it was an easier, a much easier match to work with Inoki. And of course, you can put Inoki over, and I would work very hard in doing so. And very, 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 I would call it a conservative style of wrestling.
Okay. He would also like to know what it was like to work with Jushin Thunder Liger.
Oh, it's great. You're talking about a more of a fast-paced match where you get suplexed from your knees, and you've got to be constantly aware of kicks and different moves that you're not used to from other opponents, because Jushin is very versatile. You can walk the ropes like a cat, do all kinds of things, and he's got more moves than a quart of prune juice. I mean, he's got so many different moves that he's gotten a lot of stuff from the English people that come over, and he knows how to work a variety of styles, and he's very unique in that fact, but a great guy and a great worker.
Awesome. And what was it like to work with Black Tiger? Fans, if you don't know, Black Tiger at this time was actually Eddie Guerrero.
You can't say enough good things about Eddie. Eddie, again, he's a lot like Liger. Could work any style. Hard worker, great psychology, excellent psychology. I miss Eddie all the time, and he was just a superhuman being, a strong believer. I know where Eddie's at right now. Eddie was, for pound for pound, as good as wrestler as anybody on the planet.
Yeah, I personally loved seeing him in ECW 95, and then I was really a big fan when he had come back from his accident in WCW in 97, when he had a first real big heel turn. Just incredible work. I thought his heel stuff in WCW was incredible. And then as a kid, to go back and watch him in New Japan Pro Wrestling, incredible. And to see like how he adapts everywhere he goes, like different companies and especially in different countries, incredible to watch. One last person was, what was it like to work with Kenji Moto, aka the Great Muta?
I loved working with Muda. Yeah, I pulled a great joke on Muda, one of the few Japanese guys I pulled a joke on. Muta was great, and we became really good friends, Kenji and I. And he could work American style, which was I really liked, because he came to the States and worked for a long time. He loved Hiro Matsuda, who was, my biggest teacher. And we got along really, really good. And I guess I could tell you the rib. I'm trying to think of how I could put this the best way. It's a PG audience, right? Pretty much.
You can go PG-13.
Okay, so KG knew that I had two boys. So he knows I got two boys, and he says, "Obi-san, can I speak with you about something serious?" I said, "Sir Keiji, what is it?" Or Muta-san, I call him Keiji or Muta-san. He said, "You have two boys. Yes. Yeah, I know, I know. But I want to have boy. He just got married, you know. Now he's they're gonna have babies. He said, I really want to have a boy. He said, in America, he goes, is there any secret to having a boy? And I thought about it and I kind of put my head down for a second and I said, well, yes, there is a secret to having a boy. And, but I didn't, if I tell you, you won't tell anybody. Oh, no, top secret, top secret. Okay, we shake. And I said, okay, the girl, there's, you have the male sperm and the female sperm, like you know, right? Spermatozoa. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, female swims fast, but male lives longer. No, I'm sorry, opposite. Male swims fast, but female sperm lives longer. So trick is to get male sperm to egg quicker. And he's going, oh. I said, so I got a piece of paper and I draw it. And I kind of draw it, make a little caricature. And I said, okay, this is what you have to do. I said, your wife has to get on the floor and you have to be on the bed so that there's an angle so that you can give that male sperm the biggest opportunity to get to that egg the quickest as possible. And I drew it on the, I drew a little caricature of how the woman has to be and how the man has to be. And totally forgot about it. He took this in. He took the piece of paper. I don't know what he said to his wife. Well, the next tour, I come there and I got these big bouquets of flowers. And I see KG Luther's there, big smiles on his face. And he had a, you know, he had a baby and he thinks that was because of what I And I can only just imagine him story to his wife, you know, and his poor wife. Oh gosh. But you know, every time I see him, every time we see each other, we laugh about that. You know, it's just it's something that I really haven't told on. Yeah, I don't know why I just told it right now on your show, but I did.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
Oh gosh. Yeah, it was hilarious. I never smartened him up either, so I just I didn't smarten him up to the room. I didn't have the heart to after he, I don't know, you know, $500 and all that stuff.
That is incredible.
Oh God, things we do.
So in truth be told, you talk about Hulk Hogan and him essentially helping put the Killer Bees together in an essence with, you know, because you and Jim had like a very similar build and the way you guys moved and everything. Hulk Hogan is, for better or worse, he is the top guy. And I've heard a lot of stories of how Hulk Hogan would literally help any of the boys. I heard stories of Honky Tonk Man crediting Hulk Hogan getting into the WWF because he's the one who helped notice him. Guys like Brutus Beefcake, I've heard stories. Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Outside of you know Hulk Hogan, you know, being the top guy, just how helpful was he to undercard guys, mid-card guys, and how helpful was he towards the locker room?
Well, Terry was always a leader. He could, you know, he could be your best friend, or you know, He wasn't a guy that, would go out of his way really to bury someone unless that person was trying to bury him, and a couple people did. And obviously the reverse happened. I mean, there's only one Hulkster, and he started it all. We were all there, but had he been by himself, that wouldn't have worked. That's why, I don't like, I know there's preliminary guys, squash guys, you name them all kind of names where they were at, but we've all been main eventers, never as big as Hulk Hogan. But when Vince went and picked the territories, he picked all the main event guys, all the guys that were main event. You went from the main event to, semi-main, mid-card, wherever, but it's a package, and it takes a package. You can't just have one match and expect it to draw night after night, even if it's Hogan and Macho Man and there's nothing else. You're not gonna draw. You may draw a small house, but you're gonna go see a 10, 15-minute match. That's it. No, people go there to see a package and a group of different angles and different characters that make up a card. And so we were all part of a card. And so I don't like to put labels on people. Iron Mike Sharp, for example, that guy worked his butt off, and he won some and he lost more than he won. But what I call him, undercard guy myself personally, coming from a talent point of view, Mike Sharp could have worked main event with the right angle, and he did work main events in other territories. He was a great talent. I'm just using him as an example, Mike as an example. But Terry was unique in the fact that, there was only one Hulkster when he went from the Rocky Thunder Lips thing. It created that star power. And then when we did the rock and wrestling stuff and it all tied together, when Vince brought in all the celebrities, like for WrestleMania 1, he had brought in Liberace and had, different stars there, Mr. T and, guys that were showbiz. And pretty soon we went from kayfabe to no kayfabe, and it was just the changing of that era. And it started much of it started because Vince didn't want the athletic commissions. He wanted them off of his butt. He wanted to be sports entertainment. And he still had athletic commissions, but didn't have the power that they once had. And there were a few different reasons for doing that. But whether it was a good move or a bad move, we don't know, because we didn't really see it as if it would have been portrayed as it was in the up until like 85, 88. 87, right in there, maybe 86. I'm not sure when they kind of broke kayfabe, but it's even since the Hulkster, Stone Cold, The Undertaker, The Rock, John Cena, to Roman Reigns, and all the guys. In between, there's only one Hulk Hogan, and everybody should just be thankful if they're in the business that there was a Hulk Hogan, because he made the business a much better place than it would have been. That's a for sure thing.
Yeah, I mean, I look back because I'm an 80s kid. If that spot with Hulk Hogan, him and Iron Sheik never happened, who would wrestling have become this multi-billion dollar industry? That's something I think about.
Yeah, it's a great question, Lee. It's a great question. And I it's a you know it's a great industry. I mean, it's really blossomed, flourished. I mean, they have merchandising. I was talking to the merchandising guy at Royal Rumble, and they had done $1.6 million just in the venues that weekend, in merch. Shirts, hats,
Yeah.
1.6 million. Where I bought a shirt for a friend of mine that I work on the CAC with, Rich Ingling, and it was $40 for a t-shirt. So, at CAC, at our Cauliflower Alley events, we sell t-shirts, the same quality t-shirts, for $20. And so, we pay $10 or $11. So, can you imagine how much money that they are profiting? Because they're, we used to call it keystoning. And when we would, if you bought something for $5, you'd sell it for $10 because you've got expenses, you got your money out of your pocket, you got da 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 da. Well, it's no longer like that with WWE. I mean, they're marking stuff up, 5, 6, 7, 800%. It's amazing, and people are buying it by the droves. Look at the ticket prices, everything.
I know what I paid for last year for WrestleMania. I know what I paid this year for WrestleMania, and they're literally the same seats, and there was quite a price difference.
Really?
Yeah, this year
Wow.
was a lot more money.
Oh.
Talking like close to $1,000 more. Yeah. And I'm usually sections, I'm using section 100 to 110. So I'm like close
No,
to, I'm like close to floor seats, but like the step up, like up wise.
yeah, and look at the seats with the guys' pictures on them that you take home, the chairs.
Oh
Those
yeah.
seats, those are, I heard some of those seats go for up to 4 grand.
Oh, they go expensive. And especially if you find the ones with the WWF logo on them, if they're one of the main four events. I went to my first pay-per-view. Where I sat front row was actually 2011 WWE Night of Champions in Buffalo, New York.
Right.
The seat was $400. That following November at Madison Square Garden for the same seat, it was $800.
Wow.
And that was 2011. Now it's 2024. So I like to be up close, I won't lie, but it is expensive. I've even told my friends, WrestleMania, because I went to WrestleMania 39 out in California. I'm going to do WrestleMania 40 because it's in Philadelphia. It's a lot closer. WrestleMania 41 is for me to be determined because it'll be determining on the pricing.
Right.
One thing that I was not afraid to do was to buy a movie ticket to the Iron Claw.
Oh,
Did
it's
you see
great.
that movie?
I liked it. I'm good friends with Kevin, and I lived with David for over a year. You can read in Truth Be Told about a lot of good Von Erich stories. I love the Von Erich family. I thought in truthful speaking, they made Fritz out to be much more of a heel than he really was. They left Chris out, the youngest brother. I thought the actors, they all did a good job, except, Carrie had the best body. Out of everyone, Carrie had the best body. But a lot of it was so right on the spot, right on the money. I mean, it was amazing. And Doris, what a wonderful woman. Every night there in the Von Erich home, there was food. On the either on the stove or next to the stove, Doris had always cooked a meal so that when we came home, we would usually go right over to the main house. David had a house on the property. Then Carrie had a house on the property. And then Kevin moved off of the property to live with Pam, his wife, his one and only sweet, wonderful wife. We've been to Kauai and stayed with them for a week time. Marshall and Ross, good kids, the whole family. I mean, I'm a man of very strong faith, and I read the Bible every day. And if you've ever read Job, Kevin is the closest thing to Job that I've ever seen. To have his whole family, all the tragedy, to have it taken away. I mean, the movie was very accurate. When I saw David in that jacket with the yellow rose, that's the first time I cried in the movie. And I mean, tears just started running down my eyes because David and I were so close. And, it was a very, very touching movie to me. It was pulled at the heartstrings big time. And, I talked to Kevin since then, and it was tough to go through all the stuff, but the guy who did the movie had finals on creative, and there were some things that he wasn't real fond of, but overall he was happy with the movie, and he should be, because it was a good movie. And I mean, I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
I absolutely loved it. I knew, like me personally, I didn't have much exposure to the Von Erich family. I mean, outside of what I had seen as a kid from WWF with Texas Tornado.
Oh.
So as I got older, like middle school, high school, I had to seemingly look up more about the family as the more I became a wrestling fan. And I dove deep down in, especially with wrestling families, the Anoa'is, the Flairs, the Von Erichs, the Funks, the Rhodes, and so on and so forth. And I remember people referring it to as like the Von Erich curse, and then it, like, for whatever reason, kind of reminded me of the Kennedys a little bit, with the unfortunate mishaps and their family tragedies that have happened. I thought the movie was great, and from what I know about the family, I thought it was a fairly accurate movie, like really depicted well and really done well. I thought the actors and actresses they used did a phenomenal job.
Yep.
You know,
Yes, he
and
did.
a lot of those guys had to really like beef up in the locker room. And AEW's MJF is in the movie. And just to see the wrestling community come together for that movie to hit like mainstream all over the theaters. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was done well. And I think because of that and the success that that movie is having, I for one am hoping that we get more movies like that for the wrestling world.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. There's you had mentioned the Vice TV, not the territories, but the Dark Side of the Ring episodes. And there's season 5 is getting ready to start and I did the Brutus Beefcake episode that'll be on there. There's a lot of those stories that you could turn into movies. That just, an hour on Vice is very intriguing, and it's obviously fifth season. Once you sell three seasons, just for educational purposes, if you get to three seasons, that means you made it. But now they're at season five, so it's a big hit, and a lot of those stories could be turned into movies as well. So I would like to see more of movies like that, just because of how well this the Iron Claw was done. It's something that even if you were just a casual wrestling fan, and maybe not even a wrestling fan at all, you could enjoy that movie, just based on the movie itself. So anyway, that's all good stuff. I'm ready to hit Hazel's Honey Hut. Gotta pick up
Yeah.
a orange blossom special.
Absolutely.
Get
And after off,
energy, get my toes tapping, my wings flapping, so I can get my jaw jack flapping, back flapping.
absolutely. Fans, we've been talking with B. Brian Blair and anything and everything wrestling. Has his book out, Truth Be Told. I will have links in the description. Brian, I want to thank you for coming on today. It was a real honor to speak with you and hear all these great stories. Anything left that you would like to say to the fans and any social medias you'd like to plug and anything yet coming up? The floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I'd just like to say that, in Truth Be Told, there we were talking about the Von Erichs. There's a situation in Truth Be Told when we were on horses. You got to read that. And that's, I mean, everything in the book Truth Be Told is the truth. And Ian Douglas is such a good co-writer. I mean, he helped Steve Kern with his books, and he's doing Mike Rotundo's book right now. And Ian is just a tremendous writer. He's done a lot of books in the past, and one thing he does is he makes sure that everything is accurate. He goes back and researches it, asks other people that were around, their version of the story. So he gets everything, spot on. So, Truth Be Told is a great read, and I hope that your audience gets a chance to enjoy it, and they can again get it either on Amazon, or they can go to the killerbstore.net. And I always like to plug the Cauliflower Alley Club, because we do so many good things. A group of volunteers get together, and we raise money for wrestlers that have fallen on bad financial times, and anybody that can afford it, that's a fan of wrestling, should join. It's only $35, and you get four copies of our award-winning newsletter each year, just for being a member. And you get to go to our reunion, which is extremely affordable. It's $150 for a reunion ticket, which includes two banquet tickets and all the fun that we mentioned earlier in this wonderful episode of Perched on the Top Rope. I love Herb Simmons. Herb Simmons is a big supporter of the CAC and works with the CAC, and he's got a show coming up on May 18th in the Kiel Auditorium, FanFest 2 and the Bruiser Brody Memorial Cup. You don't want to miss that. I'll be in Germany in April. I've got several other bookings, but check out Cauliflower Alley. Alleyclub.com. Check out our Twitter feed, Cauliflower Alley Club, or our Facebook feed, or go to Killer B1B on Twitter, or Brian Blair, or B Brian Blair, or Killer Bees on Facebook. I try to get to everybody that writes, but it's been a little difficult. I've had two back operations, serious back operations in the last since 2023. I ran into some very, very difficult luck, and that's why I talk about faith. I'll just finish with this. In 2023, I had a golden retriever that I love so much, Buddy, and July of 2023 started out with my my wonderful dog that was so close to me, he died in 2021. And then Mr. Wonderful passed away. My son was taken and buried in a in another county and killed. And we lost my son, and we're still going through our son, and we're still going through trials with that. And then I had back surgery. I had to completely, I went through 2 years of excruciating pain, had to learn to walk again, literally had to learn how to walk again, and had a wonderful surgeon, and had a 2 day surgery in June of June 27th and 29th of 2023. Then I had a rod pop out of my back in around Christmas time, and had emergency surgery on December 29th. I still have the stitches in my back right now, and but I can walk, normal again, and I feel good again. I'm, just full of faith and full of hope for my fellow mankind, and knowing that, there's a lot more good in people than there is evil in people. And I always try to look for the good, and I hope you'll do the same. And don't be a keyboard warrior, be a keyboard encourager, and try to do something good for your neighbor, for your buddy. Lift people up. It's just a lot easier. In other words, be a baby face. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lee Walker the Third. My gosh, being on perched on the top rope, what an opportunity this has been. It's been a lot of fun. And to all your audience, I say thank you for listening, and hope to catch you again sometime in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. And fans, remember, spoiler freeze, the way to be. We're out.